a man in Etheria who was blind on Earth, when asked if he remembered someone he once knew, replied, "Yes, I remember very well. I could not forget old friends. I am just waiting to see you all when you come over. I remember with joy many incidents in my Earth life, but God has given me a great blessing, ladies and gentlemen. He has given me eyesight that I may see and render a little service and succor to many of my fellow brothers and sisters in Earth life when they come over here. I hope I did my little best while in Earth life. It was very little, but I did the best I could. Blindness, deafness, and the other ills we suffer on Earth pertain to the physical body. Consequently, our etheric eyes and hearing are perfect, because the etheric body is perfect. Those who were blind can once more see, those who had lost arms and legs on Earth have them again, as it was the physical body which was damaged, not the etheric. I remember hearing the voice of a man who had lost an arm on Earth exultantly telling me he now had both his arms. My mother, who suffered much from rheumatism in her legs, once said to me, "I feel much younger now. I feel quite young again, no sore legs, and I can move about so freely. That has been my greatest satisfaction." One who was deaf on Earth once remarked, "Sometimes my hearing was not good when I was in the body, but I can hear all right now." Another said to a friend who was present, "Well, I can get about now. Now that I have not the physical frame to hamper me. I was like you, and worse, for I was not half so active as you are, you know. Another time we received this confirmation, "When you come here, you find yourself possessed of a body almost a replica of what you left behind, only younger looking, though not immediately." I was resting, as I was told, for a considerable time when I first came over, and when this rest period was over, I found I had regained my lost youth. But, as I have already said, what troubled me was that I could not immediately go away with those I loved. This Etherian who spoke was not prepared for a life more advanced than he could understand, but that would come later as he developed in understanding, wisdom, and knowledge. Earth memories persist, as this old friend discovered. I have been some time in spirit life, and found it very difficult to be persuaded that I had finished with the old world. I found it difficult to realize that I had left the physical body behind when I found myself possessed of a body as real as the one I had had. One that I could travel with and could go and see people who were still in Earth life, until I realized that they could not see me. I thought it was such a funny thing, and at first I found it difficult to be happy on the spirit side of life. It was a very hard struggle for me at first, but I ultimately came on someone who showed me the way whereby I could get into contact with those left behind, and from that time I made progress. I have not progressed very far, but I am now on the right way, and am happy. Yes, they can travel far, and with ease in the etheric body. When once asked about this, the reply was emphatic: "Certainly we move about in a body similar to the one we had on Earth, similar in many ways, though not exactly the same. We walk, but there is another phase of it which I would like to explain to you. If we are tired, well, we do not tire here as you do, but if we feel we would like to go to a different place at a great distance, we just concentrate on that place and we are there instantly. There is a force whereby we can project ourselves to the desired destination, and visit these different colonies." "Do you actually take your body with you?" someone asked. "Yes, we are actually there, in the body. When we have evolved sufficiently to live altogether on a higher plane, it is just a transition. When we acquire that power, we go quite readily." Our informants in Etheria consistently stated that there they do not grow old. Old age pertains to the physical body, but not to the etheric body. Consequently, those who pass on old on Earth, with the disabilities of age, return to maturity in their etheric bodies, with the vitality and health which pertains to their new perfect bodies. Likewise, those who die young grow to maturity, remain in that condition, and never grow old. On one occasion someone present complained of growing old, to be told by his wife from the other side, "You have far too much of the old today, Daddy, for I am getting younger all the time." "You are maybe getting older, but inside yourself your spirit is renewing its youth, and you will find the benefit of it when the time comes for you to come over, and all you have loved here will help you." This is what a mother in Etheria once told her daughter who was present at the séance. Someone had referred to growing old. "You will never grow old, my dear, and, when you come here, time will stand still for you, and you will never be old. You build the house which you will have on the spirit side of life by your actions on earth. I am not speaking to you individually now. I am speaking to you all, and when you cast aside the trammels of the earth life, and pass over, no matter how old you are, you come back to your youth again and your fullest vigor. There will be no forgetful memories in these days." On another occasion, this lady was again told by her mother in Etheria, "I have no halting walk now, Chrissy, and I am never tired. It is so beautiful to walk about here. Life was getting rather difficult for me, Chrissy, and all my trials are now over. Oh, it is heaven at last to be home." Then, again, a son in Etheria told his mother, "On earth you are not sad now, mother, for you know I am not far from you. God bless you, my darling, my sweet mother. I wish I could just let you see me. Well, you would say I had turned into a stalwart fine fellow now. You know, mothers never see any fault in their boys and they always praise them. I know I got praises when I did not deserve them, although I got a scolding now and again. Once a grandfather told his granddaughter, who had called him granddad, 'You make me out a very old man when you say granddad. If you saw me now, you would be surprised. I always had a buoyant outlook. I was always a boy amongst boys, and, of course, a boy amongst the girls, amongst my own girls, I mean.'" And another time a lady present heard this from her mother, "You will get a big surprise when, in God's good time, you meet me again. You will not see a tottering old woman then, but one in the bloom of brightest youth coming to greet you. The halt, the maimed, the blind carry none of these infirmities to the land of spirit. If you are old on passing, you come back to the bloom of life, and if you are very, very young on coming to spirit life, you come to maturity. But you will know us all, and we never forget the dear ones that we left behind, and do all we can to help you on your journey." In reply to a question I asked about the mind, I was told, "Certainly your mind is something apart from the brain. You bring your mind over here with you. You leave your physical brain on earth. Our mind here acts on our etheric brain and through it on our etheric body, just as your physical brain acts on your physical body. Consequently, as this is so, we can understand the following remarks made by a mother to her daughter on earth: 'I used to be forgetful, but I have a splendid memory now. I could puzzle you now.' To be repeated in other words on a late occasion: 'I know what it is to live in the past, but you were always so good and kind to me.' It is mother." Then, turning to another lady present, she addressed her by name: "I could not memorize things very well, you know. I forgot things and sometimes did stupid things, but Chrissy was always kind." Then, returning to her daughter, she said, "That is what it was, Chrissy. My memory just seemed to fade away, but you were always kind to me and helped me. God bless you. These kind deeds, my dear, are recorded. Don't you think anything about it. You will see your mother on the other side of life in the full vigor of health, and memorizing everything so well." Here, something must be said about the color of the etheric body. It is not black, white, yellow, or tan, as are our earth bodies, because the natural coloring of our skin comes about as the result of where we live on earth, the sun, or lack of sun, determining the color of the skin of the bodies of the people on earth. So we need not be surprised to hear that the etheric body is not colored like our physical body. But, instead, it radiates colors which are determined by our mental development. Consequently, a girl in Etheria, whose skin was black on earth, remarked that her body was black no longer, or, to put it in her own words, "My skin was black in the old days, my heart is white now. I love you all. There is a shining light on your brows. I'm not of any particular color now. We lose the colors of the earth life as we come on, and we take on the vibrations and beauty of the spirit body which we have built for ourselves, and this makes us bright, or dull, as the case may be. I love colors and I try to make myself beautiful when I come to see you. I am not a black girl now. I did not like it. I am glad I am not." From time to time during these seances, mention was made by the Etherians about the auras of the sitters. Our auras are the colors produced by the radiation of our etheric bodies, which can be seen by the people on the other side, though clairvoyants on Earth also claim to be able to see them under suitable conditions. Ancient literature refers to the auras around certain people, and those who have studied the subject tell us that they change according to our emotions. The aura becomes red when we are angry, brown when we are avaricious, rose when affectionate, purple or blue when religious or devotional, green when deceitful or jealous. Those having a normal yellow aura being intellectual. Our health also affects our auras, and the color helps etheric doctors to diagnose a patient's condition on Earth. When we reach etheria, the colors we radiate doubtless mean something different, but let us read what the etherians had to say about the auras they saw radiating from the sitters at the Sloan Circle. On three separate occasions, three etherian strangers came to our seance, being attracted by the auras emanating from the Earth sitters. This is what one of them said: "I know none of you, except by your auras which are round about you. They are very pleasing auras and indicate that you would be willing to give a helping hand to anyone who asked for help." Another remarked, "I do not know any of you personally. I was drawn here by the auras around you. I like the aura round about each and every one of you." The third gave his name and said, "I am Bob Hanna. I do not know any of you. I was just going round and thought I would come in when I saw the lights, the very bright lights, that surround you, to see if I could be of any help to any of you. I do not say that with any sense of exaltation, but I can see a wee bit further sometimes. I liked your auras and the conditions felt so harmonious that I just thought I would like to come in. I like the look of all of you. I saw so many lights dancing around you that I knew there were many friends, advanced friends, who were throwing their vibrations out to you." The husband in etheria of one of the sitters once spoke to a lady present. He often spoke to us, and this time he said, "I see you have a clear perception of what the other side of life will open to you. Your life has been very clean and perfect. I do not speak in a flattering way, you know. I can see that outlook in the aura round about you." When an etherian was once asked to explain what he meant when he referred to a shining one, he replied, "An advanced spirit, who, having fulfilled the master's will, has acquired a degree of perfection to help others on their way upwards. He is a guide, so to speak, and his aura is of exceeding brightness. Everyone has an aura, and some have such brilliant auras that it is almost impossible for some of us to gaze upon them." "And what kind of aura has an etherian who has not advanced far?" was once asked, to which the following reply was given: "The aura of one who has not progressed far is not so clear and bright as the others, but the auras change as spiritual advancement develops, and those who are advancing gradually change in brightness as they endeavor to follow in the footsteps of the spirits ahead of them." When one of the lady sitters was having a long talk with an etherian, who knew and respected her son in etheria, he added the following to his other interesting remarks: "This is an experience which I appreciate very much, Mrs. Lang. I am watching the various phases which you are going through now, all of you in this little gathering, much of which is strange to me. I refer to the beautiful auras surrounding you. Animal lovers will be pleased to know that their dead pets still live on. This is what I was once told when I asked if animals survive death. Most emphatically dogs, cats, and other animals survive death. No life becomes extinct, but they do not survive in the spirit world, as we term it. They have a spirit world of their own making. They do not exist in a spirit world as man exists. If, however, say a dog has affection for a human being, it can get into his or her surroundings if both have left Earth." This chapter comprises what has been told us by our friends in etheria about the etheric body, and the aura it produces. Our mind, moreover, makes pictures of all we see, and, by looking at it, they can see a picture of everything we see. They stand behind us, and to them our mind is like what a cinematograph technicolor picture is to us, all the objects and colors we see being seen by them. That is how they can read the book we are reading, as each page is pictured before them. From time to time they spoke of the different parts of their own bodies, and, when these remarks are all brought together, it will be found that they referred to 16 different parts, namely, their hands, fingers, face, lips, mouth, tongue, throat, legs, arms, feet, heart, head, hair, eyes, tears and internal organs, thus confirming that the etheric body is a duplicate of the physical body. The next chapter will record what they had to say about the way they communicate with us. Chapter 5 Communication. Anthropologists believe that the gift mankind has of being able to communicate his thoughts one to another has been one of the primary reasons for his great advance in intelligence beyond his animal ancestors. Spiritualists believe that the opening up of reliable communication between the so-called dead and the people of Earth has been responsible for a religious revolution such as has never before been experienced. Communication between the two worlds is the foundation on which spiritualism is built. On what we have been told by our friends who have passed on, spiritualists have produced a natural religion, freed from the ignorance and superstition surrounding all the world's orthodox religions. Just as speech between man and man on Earth has raised us intellectually far above the beasts, so likewise has speech between the dead and the living raised spiritualists intellectually above their contemporaries who continue to rely for their comfort and salvation on past tradition, lacking both truth and reason. This revolution in religious thought has come slowly but surely since the year 1848, the birth year of modern spiritualism, as will be obvious to anyone who compares the barbaric and cruel religious beliefs prevalent in Christendom before that date with those preached today. In 1853, Dr. F. D. Morris lost his professorship at King's College, London, because he cast doubt on hell being a fiery furnace. This is an instance of the then prevailing beliefs, but if we go back further, we find multitudes being burned, hanged, imprisoned and banished, because their religious beliefs did not conform to those pronounced by an all-powerful church. Mental development, the discoveries of science, and the knowledge we now have about our life after death, has made life on Earth more tolerable for everyone, and relegated theology to the backwoods of ignorance and superstition. Today, science brings comfort and ease to all the advanced races of mankind, and spiritualism tells us the truth about our future after death, and how we should live here to be happy hereafter. Communication between this world and the next increases our mental development, because those who have gone on before come back to tell us what is true and what is not true in past religious teaching. Instead of being trained from childhood to believe the impossible, we are now told by our friends in Etheria that they have discovered how mistaken their religious teaching was on Earth, and how we should avoid it for ourselves and our children. It is what you are that is important, and, though faith and belief may help as a crutch throughout our earthly pilgrimage, yet the place we reach in Etheria will be decided by ourselves by our own mental development. So we are told that each of us should do our best on Earth, and if we do that we can do no better. This chapter is devoted to the methods used by Etherians to communicate with us. We supply the mediums, but it is they who make communication possible. So let us read what they have to tell us. There are four ways in which this is done: by direct voice, trance, clairaudience and automatic writing. They can indicate their presence in other ways, but the foregoing are their principal means of communication. Much the best way is by what is called the direct voice, when they use their own voices and so cut out the mind of the medium, which, consequently, does not influence their conversations. We much prefer direct speech on Earth to having everything we hear come through an intermediary. Likewise, to hear their own voices makes conversation much more interesting, reliable and satisfactory, because the medium's mind does not distort what they say as it may do when other methods are used. All the extracts of conversations recorded in this book, except one, were spoken by Etherians by means of the direct voice. The one exception was when the medium was in trance, and this fact is mentioned when it occurs. This makes this collection unique and much more valuable than those records made up of trance utterances, or automatic writing and clairaudience. Moreover, they tell us the methods they employ to make communication possible, and first of all we shall consider what they have to say about the production of the direct voice. When I set about making my inquiry, the place in space from which the voices came was uppermost in my mind. So I put this question to an Etherian with whom I was speaking: you told me your world revolved with this world. How does this happen? And also, do you travel with the Earth round the sun? This was his reply. The spheres nearest the Earth revolve because we belong to this planet. We cannot see your world revolving in space, because we revolve with you. We cannot see your world until we take on Earth conditions. In taking these on, we slow down our vibrations, and come through from one plane to another, until we get our vibrations down more to a level with those of which your world is composed. We can all come down, but we cannot go up beyond our own plane until we are prepared for the change. On this occasion I was alone with the medium, except for my secretary, who was at a table on the other side of the room taking notes in shorthand of everything I said, and everything said by the various voices which spoke that evening. Taking shorthand notes in the dark is quite possible by an expert stenographer. I had carefully searched the small room in which this séance was held, made sure that the window was tightly shut and that the door was locked, the key being in my pocket. Then I took my seat opposite the medium, and when a voice spoke I leaned forward and put my ear close to his mouth, but nothing but his steady quiet breathing could be heard, whereas the different voices which spoke could be heard from all parts of the room. They were loud and clear, and, if the medium had been speaking, I would have heard him even if it had been a form of ventriloquism. A ventriloquist speaks the words without seemingly moving his lips and, by making a dummy move its lips, deludes people into thinking that the words are being spoken by the dummy. This deception is only possible in daylight, but not in the dark, and no one can practice it without using his own vocal organs. The medium sat still on his chair throughout the séance, as I had my left foot over and touching his right foot, and my right foot over and touching his left foot, but his feet remained still throughout. My left hand held his right hand and my right hand held his left hand throughout the séance. Nevertheless, bright lights floated about the room. On other occasions when my hands were free I tried to catch them, but could not, as they always evaded me, which was proof that they were guided by intelligences which could see in the dark. These lights were seen at all the séances recorded in this book. After 39 séances I had with John Sloane, for which he refused any payment, I was satisfied, after applying every test I could think of, that the voices were not those of the medium or any other Earth person present. Moreover, those who spoke could see in the dark, as whenever we asked the time it was correctly told. If someone had a luminous watch it was put away in a pocket or handbag, when the séance commenced, to be consulted only after the time was told. The two trumpets of about 2 feet high, which were in the center of the circle of sitters when the séance commenced, floated about all over the room as high as the ceiling, sometimes at great speed, and could be seen when they were coated with a band of luminous paint. The hands of the medium, and of each sitter in the circle, were held from start to finish. On another occasion, I asked for an explanation as to how it was possible for our atmosphere to be vibrated to enable us to hear the words they spoke, and this was the answer I received. I speak by materializing my etheric mouth and tongue. I shall do my best to make you understand how this is done, but remember you cannot get a proper grasp of the difficulties we are faced with until you yourself come across to our side. However, I shall explain our methods as clearly as possible. From the medium, and those present, a chemist in the etheric world withdraws certain ingredients which, for want of a better name, is called ectoplasm. To this the chemist adds ingredients of his own making. When these are mixed together a substance is formed which enables the chemist to materialize his hands. He then, with his materialized hands, constructs a mask resembling the mouth and tongue. The spirit wishing to speak places his face into this mask and finds it clings to him, it gathers round his mouth, tongue and throat. At first, difficulty is experienced in moving this heavier material, but by practice this becomes easy. The etheric organs have once again become clothed in matter resembling physical matter, and, by the passage of air through them, your atmosphere can be vibrated, and you hear his voice. This means that the basic substance needed for the production of the direct voice is ectoplasm. It might be called the connecting link between the physical and the etheric, as it is the substance supplied by our body which, when mixed with etheric ingredients, can be handled by etherians. It is the thing which is halfway between physical and etheric substance, and it acts as a bridge between the two worlds. Those rare men and women, called direct voice mediums, have this ectoplasm in much greater abundance than the rest of us, as we all have it in a lesser degree, and this being so, their presence is necessary before the direct voice can be produced from Etheria. So intrigued was J. Gilbert E. Wright, an American research chemist, with this elusive stuff, that he set about making a study of it, to end in setting down 96 different observations on its effects and behavior, but only the most important will here be mentioned. When under the influence of etheric chemists, the medium's body is used as a supply basis for the ectoplasm, and they take what they can from the sitters, but under normal conditions it cannot be seen or tasted and it gives off no smell. This stuff seems to diffuse through the tissues of the body like a gas, and emerges through the orifices because it passes more freely through mucous membrane than through the skin, to become, by treatment from etheric chemists, an amorphous, shapeless, viscous, sticky, liquid which can be seen at times in red light. It has now some of the properties of matter, as it occupies space and can be seen. Its weight is difficult to determine, but, if the medium and sitters sit on weighing machines during the séance, their weight will decrease, especially that of the medium, to become normal when the sitting is over. This has been proved by experiment. Now to continue my questions and the answers I received. I have often heard two, or sometimes three, voices speak at once. Are other masks used in these circumstances? I asked, to receive the following reply: yes, on these occasions conditions are good, and the chemist has sufficient ectoplasm to construct several masks, which are all sometimes used at the same time. That accounts for your hearing more than one voice speaking. Where is the mask placed? Was my next question, to which I received the following answer: usually, the mask is placed in the center of the circle. The chemist keeps as much ectoplasm as possible within the circle. But, when the quantity given off by the medium and sitters is small, it gathers about the floor, which accounts for voices coming from the floor when conditions are poor. On the other hand, when conditions are good and we have an ample supply, we can build right up to the ceiling, which accounts for the voices on these occasions coming from high up in the room. The person wishing to speak takes up his position in the center of the circle, and presses into the ectoplasmic materialization and then commences to speak, moving his mouth and tongue just as you do when you speak. The trumpet is used, not only to magnify the voice, but to enable it to be directed towards the person we wish to speak to. The trumpet is moved by materialized rods, and is controlled by one on this side whom we term the trumpet operator. The Etherian who said this now remarked that his co-worker, named Galaika, would now speak. I thanked him for what he had told me, and then a new voice spoke to me with a strong Irish brogue. I expressed my pleasure in hearing him speak, and my regret that I was not able to see him. Then I asked him to tell me what he and the other helpers on his side did to make it possible for him and others to speak to me. This was his reply: when a spirit wishes to speak to you, he takes on earth conditions from your surroundings. We always know when your meetings take place. I am responsible for manipulating the trumpet. I have been standing beside you waiting to speak to you, and I am glad of the chance to tell you what I can. When there is going to be a meeting, the chemist whom I work with generally lets me know when it is going to occur, and asks me to come along at the specified time. He supplies a substance, and also obtains a certain amount from the medium and the other sitters. It is the combination of this spirit substance with ectoplasm, drawn from the medium and sitters, which enables us to materialize. If there is enough, it allows the metallic instrument to go to all parts of the room, and voices to be produced. When I came here tonight, I first looked to see where I could best gather the most ectoplasm. The chemist gets it from me and adds his ingredients, and it is then conveyed to the most suitable place. I also speak for those who cannot do so, and also for those who may be a long distance away. These latter send me their messages as you send messages by wireless. These are picked up by a receiver and given to me. I then pass them on, giving the person's name. I merely act as an exchange. When spirits come into the circle to speak, they actually, for the time being, partially materialize, their mouth and tongue being coated by the substance we make.